We're joined on the phone now by Larry Millette. He was a reporter and architecture critic for the St. Paul Pioneer Press for 30 years. He's the author of 15 books, including Sherlock Holmes and the Runestone Mystery and five other mystery novels in that series. Welcome, Larry.
Glad to be here.
Thank you for joining us tonight. Well, I just thought this was such a fun concept, and I really enjoyed the book. I just finished it, that I wanted to talk to you about how you do this. And so you were a reporter and an architecture critic for a long time. How did you move into writing fiction?
Well, I had always been interested in mystery writing and mystery fiction, and grew up reading Sherlock Holmes stories, among many others. And so we had a lot of people who wrote for the St. Paul Pioneer Press who ended up getting into other types of writing, fiction, among other things. And so there was kind of a vibe out at the time, and I decided I'd try my hand at it. kind of mix history and mystery, and because I had written Lost Twin Cities and some other books that had a lot of history in them, and it worked out pretty nicely.
Right. Well, it did. I mean, I so enjoyed, I want to get to that a little later about how you mix the history in, but how did you get the idea for doing this particular series? You must have been a big Sherlock Holmes fan before you started.
I was, although the first thought really was the first book in the series, the Sherlock Holmes and the Red Demon, which came out 1996. It was, the idea originally was to do a story, some sort of story about the Hinckley Forest Fire of 1894 in Minnesota, which killed over 400 people and was a well-publicized and quite famous event. And it was only as I was sort of toying with the idea of how to write a mystery about that fire that at some point I got the idea of bringing Sherlock across the pond to be the investigator.
Mm-hmm. Well, describe the series or, the idea for us a little bit. And then also I'd like you to talk about the character Shadwell Rafferty that you created. But so tell us where and when the stories are set.
Well, the first book in the series, Sherlock Holmes and the Red Demon, is set during the Hinckley Forest Fire, which occurred on September 1st, 1894. And for that one, I had James J. Hill, the railroad baron, bring Sherlock Holmes over to investigate because some of the damage was to his railroad. And then I sort of went from fire to ice. I set the second one in St. Paul in 1896 during a winter carnival.
Uh-huh.
And had a murder in one of the ice palaces. And then the third one is the Runestone Mystery, which was based, of course, on the Kensington Runestone, which was discovered in 1899 out near Alexandria. And then the fourth one, The Secret Alliance, Sherlock Holmes and the Secret Alliance, is set during a visit to Minneapolis by President William McKinley.
Uh-huh.
In 1901, again, based on a real incident. And then the last one, which is the only one that's not really set in Minnesota, called The Disappearance of Sherlock Holmes, is actually based on some earlier Conan Doyle characters. And it's kind of an adventure story that runs from London to New York to Chicago, and in which Shadwell Rafferty eventually makes an appearance in Chicago. But Rafferty showed up in the second story, the Ice Palace murders. He's a bar owner, a saloon keeper in St. Paul, and I felt I needed a detective to be a challenge for Holmes, but also a friend and a compadre, as it were. And I thought that the idea of having a saloon keeper as a detective made a lot of sense, because who knows more about human nature than saloon keepers?
That is so true. Well, and I enjoyed their back and forth during the book, because he was definitely set up as somebody who's, almost as quick and clever as Holmes
right.
is.
Yeah.
And that was fun to see.
Yeah. A little bit of a competitor, but also a friend. And it's fun to see how they interact and they go about things in a little bit different fashion, but that's kind of how it works. I did write a sixth book, which just came out this last year, called set in St. Paul, called The Magic Bullet, and it's actually a locked room mystery featuring Shadwell Rafferty with a cameo by Sherlock, and that one's set in St. Paul in 1917 during World War I.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things I was struck by when you talked about, bringing in history is that the book brings in so much history of that time and the place that it's in, and even there's a part in this runestone mystery where they go through, is it Sauk Center, and they meet Sinclair Lewis?
Except
you call him Harry Lewis?
There's little scenes like that. I try to kind of introduce characters in passing, real people, to kind of mix in with the fictional characters. So we have a little fun with those sorts of things as well. If the timing works out, yeah.
Right. Well, how did you do? Tell us a little bit about how you know what kind of research or what steps did you take to ensure that it was so authentic?
Well, I started out writing history and did that before I turned to fiction. So I'm used to doing historic research, and particularly people will find a lot of architectural related things in my books, and that's kind of my specialty. I'm an architectural historian, so I know a lot about buildings and places and things like that. So I start out with the germ of an idea, and in many cases it's a real event, like the discovery of the runestone and questions which arise regarding its authenticity. And then I just kind of do my research, learn as much as I can about the era, the place, the incident itself, the characters who were involved, and then create a fictional story around that. The actual murder mystery is always created. It's not based in most cases on some actual murder, but I create that around the particular situation so that you're kind of mixing what is real and what isn't.
Yes, and I also noticed that you seem to bring in were names of things and use them for people.
Yeah,
like there's somebody named Kensington in this,
right,
in this
yeah,
book
I'll bring
and
in,
so forth.
I'll, a lot of the names of the characters in the Runestone Mystery are based on actual people who were involved in the Runestone, but I've kind of moved them around, given them different assignments and different names and all of that, or different roles in the case. But that's kind of I have a little bit of fun. I try to people who are runestone historians, and there are quite a few of them out there. They'll recognize some of the names and realize that I've sort of played around with them a little bit.
Yes, well, I caught that. If you just joined us, we're speaking with Larry Millett. He is an author, and he has written a series of books where Sherlock Holmes actually comes to Minnesota and solves mysteries. Larry, obviously, Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson are, you know, famous and beloved fictional characters. What does it feel like to write about them or write in? I mean, this book was in Watson's voice.
Right.
I mean, how do you do that? I would find that rather intimidating.
Yeah, it is in a way. I mean, I think you have to sort of have a feel for the stories, obviously. And I've read all the stories and tried to get a feel for how Watson would tell a story. I don't try to be, you know, 100% authentic and faithful. Obviously, I'm writing in American English as opposed to English, and I'm writing at a much different time than Conan Doyle wrote the original stories. But I think it's mostly a matter of sort of developing an ear for how the stories were told originally, for how Watson kind of unfolded the tales, and then trying to it's not necessarily entirely recreate it, but give a sense of that in the stories that I write. I deliberately use fairly long sentences. I don't write a thriller style with, you know, short, punchy sentences. I try to make it sound as though it was something that might have been written during the Victorian era. So it's all kind of part of trying to figure out a way to tell a story that makes sense and that people will find believable as Watson's voice.
Mm-hmm. How hard is it to try to keep them in character 100 years later?
You have to be very careful, and obviously there are anachronisms that occur, and I've had a few that I've been called to task on. But the basic thing is to try to, if you've read the stories and kind of absorb them, and absorb the character in some way, understood how the character operates, how the writer who depicts those characters operate, then it becomes almost natural after a while. You sort of fall into the rhythm of the story. You have a sense of what you can say and what you can't say, And at the same time, I try to, you know, kind of expand on the characters a little bit. I mean, this isn't Sherlock Holmes as he was in the original stories. It's Sherlock Holmes filtered through my sensibility.
Right.
But it's certainly a recognizable Sherlock Holmes. I don't carry the character off into distant new realms, but I try to make some sort of incremental changes that might add a little bit to the reader's understanding of who he was and how he operated.
Well, as a longtime Holmes fan, I have to say it's fun to have stumbled on six more Holmes books to read now.
yeah, they were fun. They're fun to do.
You know,
and it's Sherlock Holmes, I always tell people, is without a doubt the most famous literary character in the world. You could go to, you know, pretty much anywhere on this planet, and there are people who would be familiar with the Sherlock Holmes story and with the name and all the associations that go with it. And, of course, the University of Minnesota here in Minneapolis has the largest collection of Sherlockiana in the world.
Yes, I was just going to ask you about that. Could you talk a little bit about that, please?
Yeah, the University of Minnesota Libraries, they obtained some years ago some very large collections that were maintained by a number of people who were real Holmes fanatics. And over the years, they've expanded that, and so they have editions of the book, as I like to tell people, in languages you've never heard of. You know, I mean, it's just amazing. They have memorabilia. They have all sorts of things, and they have a conference that people come from around the world to talk about Holmes. Minnesota has one of the oldest Sherlockian societies in the United States, the Norwegian Explorers, and they draw their name from the fact that during the so-called Great Hiatus after his duel to the death with Dr. Moriarty at Reichenbach Falls, Holmes disappeared for a number of years while Moriarty's agents were chasing him, and one of the names he went under was Sigurdsson, the Norwegian Explorer.
That's right.
Yeah, so they actually have a monument at Reichenbach Falls in Switzerland, which was placed by the Norwegian Explorers. So they're a local group that has a strong membership, and so there's a lot of connections. The book, the main book about annotated Sherlock Holmes, which is this huge book in which an expert author named William Baring Gould puts all the stories in context and provides background and notes. Baring Gould was actually born in Minneapolis.
Oh.
And the other thing that is absolutely true is when I wrote these stories, my house overlooked Baker Street.
Nah.
Yes, it's true. In St. Paul.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so it was sort of like karma, you know. It had to be. But I didn't even make that connection until one day I'm literally staring out my attic study and I'm saying, wait a minute, that's Baker Street down there.
I love that.
Yeah.
So do you go to those conferences?
No, you know, I'm actually not a, believe it or not, I'm not a a dyed-in-the-wool Sherlockian conference kind of guy. It's almost a different thing, being a writer and being someone who's sort of into the whole Sherlockian world. I do other kinds of writing and mm-hmm. other kinds of things, and this is just sort of part of my career, so I'm not actually, you know...
But you know a lot about it.
I know a lot about it, but believe me, there are people who know much, much more than I do. I sort of appropriate them for very specific, you know, my very specific needs and specific situations, but there are people who have a tremendous command of the stories and of the details, and that's part of the fun of Holmes, is all of the little details that go in the stories, making up all the names of the stories that were never published and things like that.
Wow. That's pretty cool. Well, I was just in Devon, and I visited Henry Baskerville's grave.
Ah,
that was pretty cool. There really was a Henry Baskerville, as I'm sure you know.
Yes, and did you find the phosphorescent hound?
No.
No? All right. Well,
shoot.
Yeah.
I guess I'll have to go back.
Yeah, you have to go back. He's probably out there right now waiting for you.
Well, so there are six books in this series, Larry. Is any plan to do more?
Well, I'm... Primarily now, I'm actually back to doing nonfiction to a great extent. I've books on architecture, but yes, I hope that there will be more. I've got one planned out called Rafferty's Last Case, which will take place in the year of Rafferty's death, which has already been mentioned in one of my books, 1928. And I intend to bring Holmes back for that as the grand finale. And so there's going to be at least one more big story with Holmes and maybe some others as well. But I hope to do some more Rafferty books with maybe just an appearance or two from Holmes as
mm-hmm.
well.
Well, that sounds great. We'll look forward to that. Can I ask you one more question before I let you go? I read somewhere in my research on you that at one time you actually wrote the clues for the St. Paul Winter Carnival.
Yes, I did.
Is that true?
I'm very proud of that.
How fun.
Yeah, Don Boxmeyer, the late Don Boxmeyer, who was a legendary reporter at the St. Paul Dispatch for years, we for I think 8 years, we were the clue writers, and that was a trip. We were sort of in the period when clue writing started to get more difficult because of the internet.
Oh.
We were kind of right on the cusp there, and it has become more difficult because now everybody is, of course, in contact with everybody else, and the clues get discussed and analyzed and you know shot back and forth between all these people. So it's become a much trickier and more difficult thing to do than I think it was back in the old days. But yeah, we had great fun. It was always exciting, and a couple of years we wrote what we thought were fantastic clues, and they discovered it way too early. And other years we were amazed that people didn't discover it earlier, so you never know.
Oh, well, that sounds like lots of fun. Larry, I want to thank you so much. It was really a pleasure to speak with you tonight, and
thank you.
We'll look forward to that next book.
All right, that'll be great.
Okay, thank you.
All right, yep.
Bye-bye.